It sure is, and we're going to go behind door number three in just a moment for the secret guest on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we are. We're going now to door number three. Hello there.
Hi, George.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm always glad to be talking to you on Coast to Coast.
Catherine Austin Fitz.
Oh.
How are you?
Am I easy to figure out or
no,
what?
You know what? I just have this knack of having voices in my head, and that's what it was.
I was just telling your wonderful producer, Tom, that I've been, you know, I watch every day what's going to be on Coast to Coast, and I've been watching for the last 30 days, and I said, you know, one, George must be the smartest guy in the world, because he talks to all these brilliant people, but the other thing is, it's so interesting. I think I'm the most mundane person who's ever been on Coast to Coast.
No, are you kidding? They love you. As a matter of fact, I was in Las Vegas at a remote viewing conference last week.
Uh-huh.
And you, Mish Shedlock, and Gerald Celente were all singled out as being the ones who helped steer so many millions of Americans out of this economic mess before it even hit.
Well, that's wonderful. You know, well, you remember, you gave a channel to the people who were talking about what was really going on in the economy before anybody else.
Well, you know, we feel these things. We sense these things, and we run with it. How have you been? What's
new? I've been great. I just got back from a conference in Arizona.
You don't stop, do you?
I don't have a choice. Anyway, I was amazed, George, because there is a real shift going on. I did a workshop with it was a small group, and we could really just talk intimately. And what's amazing is we now have, you know, it's almost like the presidential election is over. People realize it's not going to make a difference. And now they're just letting go. It's almost as though there's an emotional letting go of the old system.
Is that a good thing?
Well, on one hand, it's kind of scary because you're letting go of a huge edifice. On the other hand, it's good because you can't solve a problem until you can see it, and you can't solve a problem until you can take responsibility for it. Now, you know, one of the things that's kind of kept the system going is people's faith in it, and as faith is lost, you know, it's scary because we're coming into a period of incredible change. And so there was both negative and there was positive. I feel positive about it because I think the faster we let go, the better. But the interesting thing is, you know, I don't know if you remember my scenario of the slow burn.
Yeah, tell us again.
And so, you know, if Gerald Celente thinks we're really going to have a collapse this year, I believe slow burn is where the system keeps going by simply subsidizing itself by, you know, stealing and letting go certain pockets of population. So groups of people or places can go down. It's sort of the shock doctrine theory that Naomi Klein has.
General Motors is going to cut another 4,000 jobs. I mean,
right.
When does it all stop? Gasoline prices way over $3 a gallon here in L.A.
Well, here's what's going on there, George. We by doing the bailouts, we basically turned over a huge war chest to the banks.
Yes.
And as you know, I call this a financial coup d'etat. The banks now have a huge war chest. They don't need anything from the process. A lot of them are out from under the government restrictions in the TARP program.
Paid back the money. They're gone.
And now it's time to come in for the kill.
Good point. Good point. You know, Ron Paul is the only politician who truly sees it. And I don't know how successful he's going to be trying to monitor the Fed, for example.
Well, the new package of regulation that the president just proposed essentially says, if you take the whole thing, read between the lines, it says the Fed has the power to do whatever it wants. It's complete dictatorial powers for the Fed. And so, Ron Paul's proposals to audit the Fed or limit the Fed are exactly counter to the way that things are going. So now he's gotten more and more co-sponsors, more and more people are listening, and I think a lot of the disgust I've seen in the last week is really people intuitively understand that the Fed was the problem to begin with. In other words, we have a crisis. It comes from the Fed and its members' banks. It's driven by them. And now the solution, so-called, is to just give more power to the people who created the problem in the first place.
Now the Fed's going to meet one. They meet on Wednesdays once a month, right?
Yep.
And I think this is for tomorrow. I think they do they meet tomorrow or the week after? I think it's tomorrow.
I should know, and I don't.
I'm pretty sure it's tomorrow. Do you think they'll raise interest rates?
I think they're doing everything they can to hold them down.
They won't lower them because they can't get much lower, can they?
Right. There's real, because we've had so many bailouts and we've essentially printed so much money, there's a real pressure on interest rates to go up. And what you're watching is a combination of inflationary actions like printing money, giving it to the banks, you know, financing huge deficits.
It's catching up to us way too soon, though.
Well, but on the other thing, on the other hand, what you're watching is what I call demand destruction. So things that cause people's expenses to go up and income to go down means they spend less. And so you're watching huge demand destruction and an absence of faith in, you know, in the system. And so people are hoarding money. Money does not have the multiplier velocity that it's at.
No. If a robust economy and people were working and spending money was a 10, and the worst of the worst was a 1, a massive depression, where would we be right now on this poll?
In America, we'd be about a 3.
That's not very high.
No. Well, in every, you know, America breaks down to 3,100 counties. And if you come into every county or every state, it's the same issue. You have an economy that's centralized and is deeply dependent on federal money of all different kinds, and that federal money constricts economic activities in a variety of ways. And so basically the local economy gets weaker and weaker. It's essentially being harvested, and so it becomes more and more dependent on government checks, and there's less sort of basic economic activity. So we're centralizing it in a way that shrinks total wealth, and that process continues. The big thing this summer, George, the big question mark right now in the economy is, and July is going to be a very, very telling month. We've got the state and local government budget deficits to sort out. And the question is, are there going to be backdoor bailouts, or are we really going to have old-fashioned budget balancing? And I think California is going to be the bellwether.
Yeah.
If the California deficit really gets solved by good old-fashioned, you know, budget balancing, we're gonna watch really shock doctrine California style, and a lot of folks in California, I think, don't understand what could happen. You know, the rabbit's gotten pulled out of the hat the last time we were in this situation in 2004, and I've been amazed because I deal with a lot of people in California in my business. And I don't think they realize what could happen this time around.
Well, and you're right. And if they have to cut things in budget for the state and even local areas, one of the first places you have to cut would be labor. You can't cut, for example, police forces. I mean, especially in this day and age, when tensions mount, you need more police, not less.
I'll tell you something. I got a report. Someone called me yesterday from the Los Angeles area. And a nice residential area, and they said my neighbor was attacked this week, and I called the police, and they never came. And so I finally, you know, found a local policeman and said, "What's going on?" And he said, "They're pulling the police off the streets."
Unbelievable.
They're just pulling. Well, what you're seeing, George, if they cut the old-fashioned way, then they're going to cut muscle where it, for every dollar you cut. In that the state itself is going to lose more than a dollar in revenues as it cycles through, and you know, it may lose federal revenues and other revenues. So it's a spiral down.
You know, property values going down, for example, in St. Louis County, yet they're trying to raise your taxes. They know they can't get the money back because of the declining values, so they raise the percent of the tax.
Right.
It's crazy.
Right. One of the things I'm advising people all over the country is to, if there's any ability to question or protest property tax raises,
just do it. Huh?
And an assessment. This is a time everybody should put, you know, more time in their budget for going through their bills very carefully and trying to contest them.
And you know what? This is also the time to either loan modify or do something with your mortgage. If you can save 1 or 2 points. That adds up, doesn't it?
Right, or if you can get out of debt. One of the things that's happening is as people lose confidence in the brokerage system,
yes,
we're watching more and more money instead of borrowing money on your, you know, having a mortgage and then taking that money and investing it through the brokerage system, people are pulling out. I'll never forget an interview of a young woman who's coming out of a bank in Iceland after the crash up there, and somebody said, you know, what are you doing? And she said, I'm taking my money out of the bank and paying my mother's mortgage off. It's a better place to be.
That's interesting.
Right. So we're watching the intermediation is now ramping back down, and people are starting to disintermediate.
Well, the old rule used to be pay off your debts if the interest rate is higher than what you could get someplace else because you're making money that way, and now would be huge to do that.
Right. The best no-risk yield that people are getting is on stockpiling. If I buy paper towels now as opposed to waiting and, you know, buying them a year from now, then I'm going to get a capital gains, and it's not taxable. So
interesting.
Across the board, you're watching people stockpile.
Ammo's another area, Catherine. People are stockpiling ammo if they can get it.
Well, it's really funny. I sat down before I got on, George, and I said, okay, what are the places in the economy I'm getting a report of really rising demand and, you know, healthy profits in small businesses?
Mm-hmm.
It's gardening.
Yep.
It's fresh food. It's guns and ammo, and it's precious metals.
Yeah, you are absolutely right.
What does that say?
You are absolutely right, man. It's I don't know. I just, the popularity of the president's waning a little bit. I would have said he's doing a pretty good job, except for the stimulus. I just wish he didn't give that money away.
George, I have to disagree with you. The more central control cannot solve anything. In other words, we don't have an economic problem. We have a political problem.
True.
What do you mean
you disagree? In what area?
I do not think this president is doing a good job.
Well, take the economy out. Is he doing a good job on everything else? International relations?
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Right.
When I said the stimulus, I meant the economy.
Right. What he's done a good job of is he's very much liked in Europe. Well, in, you know, everywhere he's admired internationally. He's very well spoken. He is sort of very intelligent and presentable. And he has returned America. You know, the idea of somebody intelligent and capable running the country is after the last administration, is a very good presentation to the world. So I think, and if you look at his age and his background, he's someone that the world relates to a lot more.
That's right.
In other words, much younger, much more sort of self-made person.
And just so people know, you once worked in a Republican administration, right?
Right.
So there you have it.
And I've been a contractor to a Democratic administration, but I don't think of, I really don't think in a framework of Republican versus Democrat.
No, I don't.
What I find when it comes to the money, you know, that in Washington, the Republican, the Democrats are—it's much more of Washington versus Main Street, kind of.
Well, government should not be owning companies. We shouldn't be doling out this kind of cash. You know, if they go bankrupt, they go bankrupt. Let the free marketplace dictate what happens.
We don't. But here's the thing: we don't have a free marketplace, and we're competing globally with other economies that also don't have a free marketplace. So. If you're competing globally, I think one of the ways we've gotten into this centralization pickle is the countries or the groups of people, the cartels that win, are the ones that are great at warfare and organized crime, because you've got to be great at the high margin businesses if you're going to win globally, and that's part of how we got here. I think you have a whole generation of leadership, George, that really thinks warfare is the way to go and organized crime is the way to go, because that's what's worked today.
And that could happen still.
We are
pretty close to that.
$1.4 trillion of global military and arms expenditures in the last year.
The old saying is, let the mob run the government because they're pretty efficient, and then let the government run the mob and they'll screw that up.
Well, I worked in government, and what I found is the people who worked in government are pretty competent, and what if you're competent but you're you're trying to manage a multiple personality disorder society, you know, then government gets blamed because it's trying to implement, you know, it's trying to implement one thing and say another. When I was Assistant Secretary of Housing, I used to, the secretary would call me in and he said, I want you to go cancel this program. And then he'd call in my deputy and he'd say, I just told Fitz to go cancel this program, make sure she fails. And the reason was he needed to say that he was stopping the corruption. At the same time, his, you know, as a political matter, he needed to not stop it.
Good point. If what do people ask you the most when you're out speaking?
What they ask me the most is, in the last 3 months, is it going to crash? What most people are worried about is that we're going to get a complete meltdown. So, you know, when you listen to Gerald, I just read Gerald's latest newsletter. He's absolutely convinced we're going to have, you know, real chaos. And
well, he's been right all along. It's scary.
It is scary.
I mean, I'd like him to be wrong on this.
No, you wouldn't.
Why?
No, you wouldn't. Because the reason we haven't gotten an implosion or meltdown for 20 years, George, is every time we get close to the market adjusting by a real drop in price. Remember, if we get a crash in a variety of different markets, it's a signal that we need to change. Okay? Now, rather than let things crash, we haven't, you know, we've had 9/11, or we've had the Iraqi war, we've had the Afghanistan war. In other words, we are balancing supply and demand with warfare and force as opposed to real economic productivity. So a crash would signal let's change. The other thing a crash would do is signal maybe the leadership style of crime pays needs to change. Because what you're looking at is, as I said, it's a political problem. What you're looking at is you're looking at a leadership that is behaving in fundamentally non-economically productive ways, and a society doing the same. And so a crash is gonna change the leadership, and it's gonna change the way we do things. So, you know, if we continue to slow burn and use basically the insiders subsidize themselves at the expense of the outsider, we're going to keep centralizing, and literally it's the Orwellian scenario. So you end up in 1984 instead of something that's kind of healthy. I'd like to see us return to market economies. I'd like to see democracy continue. So I'd rather have honest economic feedback than just more central Soviet kind of control.
Well, you know, let's hope that that happens. How much time do we have to work our way out of this, Catherine?
We have as long as nature will give us. So I think we have, for 500 years, George, the first world has been on the central banking warfare model. And that model has worked very well, and now it's not working. And so you're talking about a very deep change. And I think the challenge is, in the first world, we have aging populations. And so a decision was made in the 90s, and part of what we're watching is the repercussion of this. Decision was made to pull huge amounts of capital out of North America, out of Europe, and shift it into the emerging markets.
Yes.
Now, in many respects, that's a very intelligent decision, because the long-term trend is the young populations are in Asia, the young populations are the Middle East. Those are the markets that's going to grow. And so we shift shift our industrial capacity, we shift money, and let those economies grow. And that's a major transition. As we do that, the question is, okay, how do we become sustainable in terms of the environment and natural resources?
Well, did they know that we would be hurt in that process?
Of course.
Yeah.
I mean, a decision was really made in the 90s to let the American middle class go down.
Let it go.
And we had two. If you read my story, the Dylan Reed and the Aristocracy of Stock Profits, what I talk about, so you had two sort of a debate in Washington in the 90s. One group of people said, look, let's pay down our debt, let's reengineer our skills, and let's get some real money behind boomer pensions and the Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. And the other group said, no, let's take the money and run. We have an obligation to invest it in high-return societies, and that's what they did.
That's what they did. Let's take final calls with you, Catherine, when we come right back. Catherine Austin Fitz, behind door number 3, and we'll take your phone calls next. On our next Coast to Coast show, Scott Roberts joins us, paranormal investigator. He's going to be talking about hauntings and demonic forces. But we, through good, shall fight back. But Scott will be our guest on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Catherine Austin Fitz, our third guest behind the secret door. Her websites will be linked up in just moments on Coast to Coast AM. Solari.com is one of them. Solari.com. What's it like to be behind the third secret door, waiting and waiting? How many hours were you back there?
I was back here about 10 minutes.
Come on, you're supposed to play along. Are you there?
I was thinking about it for hours, but I was just Tom had me on here for about 10 minutes.
That's quick. Okay, let's go to the phones. This half hour is going to fly by. Let's go to Brian in Bloomington, Illinois, east of the Rockies. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, how you doing? I just want to comment on, I hear things about the stimulus program, and I'm not a big fan of it, but I understand some of the reasonings, but there's a deeper root to that, and part of the problem is just the basic idea of the capitalism we have, and it reminds me of the old story of the Indian story of the scorpion that convinces the fox to ride across the river on his back and stings him halfway, and the fox asks him, "Why'd you sting me? Now we're both going to drown," and the scorpion says, "Well, you knew it wasn't my nature," and that's the aspect of it. What my point is, I got something in my throat.
That's right.
My point is that...
Happens to me sometimes, too.
Yeah. The point is that this capitalist system that we've gone, and it's evident in the bankers' response to all the stuff that, you know, was asked of them and the response to them, you know, cutting salaries and all this. And basically, it's, hey, it's our right. You guys are poor schmucks, and that's just the way it is. And it reminds me of what happened in... with the Sandinista Contras, the French Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, which got us communists. And that's that when capitalism is let go unfettered, you become oligarchs. And in a way, we're not quite there yet, but we're in that aspect of it. And it's just like the whole thing of the scorpion. It's just the nature of the beast to get to that point. And the politicians are brought along as part of that, either wittingly or unwittingly. And until we change that fundamental aspect of capitalism. I don't see it. You're one of your other guests talked about the 3 billion poor in the world, and you know, 1.5 billion or 2 billion of those in China and India said, "Hey, we tasted a little bit of the good life. We want more." And from my understanding, if China, everyone in China wanted to live at the standard of the U.S. Citizen, we would need a whole nother planet resource-wise.
Right.
And you know, we can't keep going the way we're going, and nobody wants to address that.
Right. I think those are excellent comments. First of all, the metaphor of the scorpion and the frog is a great story for what's going on. I don't think what we're looking at is capitalism, because if you look at the people who are winning in this economy, they're basically winning by rigging government resources for themselves in a model where if they lose, they get bailed out. If they win, they get to keep the money themselves. So that's a model where, you know, it's basically a model predicated on force and sort of dirty dealings and dirty tricks. And one of the problems with it is people aren't winning from fundamental economic productivity. The theory in a capitalist system is if you're the most productive, then you win, and only the productive survive. Now we've got the survival of the forceful as opposed to the survival of the unproductive. And what we're seeing in the system is people are basically with getting bought with things like stimulus packages as opposed to, you know, dealing with what they need to do to get to some kind of fundamental economic productivity, because that's what's going to have to happen in the local economies on the ground. And so, you know, we're headed in a bad direction. The arrogance, I think that what Brian said about the arrogance is deeply disturbing. I just recently we had a report of big bonuses by one of the companies that just or expectations of huge bonuses by one of the companies that's just bought out of TARP. And I took a look at it, George, and the first thing I felt was real fear for the safety of the families of the people in that company. because I said, you know, don't these guys realize this is getting to a point where this is dangerous? I mean, we're talking about, you know, Louis saying let them eat cake in a way that inspires, you know, the wrong kind of behavior. So you fear for what can happen when you have this kind of arrogance.
Next up, let's go to Anonymous, west of the Rockies. Hi.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a lot of respect for your show and agree with many of the topics. And, Catherine, you are an amazing woman.
Thank you.
Why are you Anonymous?
I do. I'm shy. Okay. This is kind of off the, not off the path, but I can't help but wonder, I don't watch television, and I cannot help but wonder if everybody turned their television off or at least did not watch financial-based programs on the various channels that are on the 500 cable stations, if the energy might shift a little bit because they're not constantly being bombarded by the frenzy that is out there. And number two, I recently, every now and then when I am in front of a TV, I will watch Frontline or I'll watch some program where it's educational to me. And Frontline just broadcast the program about Bank of America by the merger with Bank of America and Merrill Lynch. Why aren't these people being prosecuted? Why is it that they're allowed to continue to destroy our economy, which also destroys the economy of the globally? I don't understand that.
There's been talk, Catherine, that the Merrill Lynch deal with Bank of America was force-fed to the bank. Do you believe that?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. I think there's a story on TV and in the media about what's going on, and it's a different story than what's really going on, which is financial coup d'etat. What we're watching is the governance system of resources on the planet and certainly within the American empire being re-engineered. So, I mean, literally, we're watching a coup d'etat, and the bankers are leading that. They're doing, you know, they're kind of taking it where they, you know, their leadership wants to go. It's a great comment that the caller made, because the one thing, if you said to me, what is the one action that everyone in America can do that will most help them succeed in this environment, I would say number one thing is turn off the TV, because the most important investment we make is an investment of our time. And there, at this point, the disinformation on TV, particularly financial news, is, you know, it's just turn it off, don't even watch it. It's you need that time to deal with a real world, and you've got to get your information from somebody who's for you. And so, you know, I would say, George, that you've proven many times that Coast to Coast is for them and for us. And so, you know, get your news from a place like Coast to Coast. Just turn off the TV. We don't have the time. If you look at how much time Americans are spending watching TV and said, look, if we just took half that time and used it to start talking to our neighbors about, you know, and the second thing we should do is develop personal relationships with farmers and bankers you trust, because whether it's food or money, you know, we're going to have to bring much more into dealing just with networks that we really know we can trust. So, you know, don't just bank somewhere because it's the cheapest ATM card. Bank somewhere because you know it's people you trust, and they're multiplying money throughout your local economy. They're not moving, you know, they're not taking your deposits and using your money to move your jobs abroad.
Thanks, Catherine, for that. Let's go next to Eugene, Oregon. Mike, it's your turn. Hey, Mike, go ahead.
Hey, George and Catherine.
Hi, Mike.
Hi there. I have a question about comprehensive annual financial reports.
Great question.
As opposed to the annual budgets that they always tell us are short. Do you think that they should sell some of these stockpiled assets that are on the balance sheets of all these counties, cities, states, so forth?
Careful, because when they do, they're going to sell it at 10 cents on the dollar, and the guys who've got the war chest are going to pick it up cheap.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. I mean, we have these assets, or, you know, the corporate entities of our states and governments and so forth have these assets, and I would think they're for emergencies, but if they all start selling them, of course, there's going to be a lot of selling.
Right. Well, the question, the consolidated reports is a great question. I put up on my blog a series called Shock Doctrine California, Part 1, Part 2, Part 3. And in Part 2, I put up all the links to all the financial information on the state. And if you dig into the financial balance sheets and income statements and budgets of any state and local entity, what you discover is there's plenty of resources, and the question is, are we going to strip them, in another round of economic warfare and turn them over to the guys with a war chest at a cheap price? And that's basically what we did in 1989, the last time we were in a cycle like this. Or are we going to really use those resources to rebuild our economy? And either one is possible. The second thing I wanted to mention is one of the real wild cards in here is technology. If you look at our healthcare expenses or our energy expenses, what they reflect is not an economic problem. What they reflect is the suppression of lots of technology that could be integrated for massive improvements in productivity. But, of course, that's going to decentralize political control. So to me, the first thing is we bring transparency to how the government money works and how assets work, particularly within, by county and region, number one. And number two, we unsuppress technology, because that's what's really going to get the economy going again.
Do you think President Obama is trying to do too much too soon? I mean, he came in storming in stimulus, working on the rest of TARP. He had taken half of what the former administration had not spent of the, what was it, $700 million at the time. He spent $375 million. Something like that. He went storming into that, and then it turned out to be billions.
I think what Obama has done has taken us from an economy where the financial sector has far too much power to one in which the financial sector has dictatorial control.
And would that have happened, let's say, had McCain gotten elected? Was this going to happen anyway?
The trend and direction was the same. But I think Obama has got so much popular support, both in North America and in internationally, that he took it much further than McCain could possibly have done.
Was this planned? I mean,
yes.
When he was campaigning, was he really aware of all of this?
Well, I can't say how much he was or was not aware of, but it was clear to me from way back that he'd been profiled and supported. Particularly by the banking groups, and this was how they were going to take the financial coup d'etat to the next level. To me, this was pretty obvious all along.
Let's go to Vancouver, British Columbia, where Catherine and I and Whitley Strieber were just months ago. Terry, you're up with us. Hi, Terry.
Hi, George. Another fabulous show.
Thanks.
I have two questions about things that Catherine has said in previous shows. One is that she said that the war on drugs was fabulously successful in that it centralized federal power and it maximized drug profit. So one question is she implying that the government was motivated to maximize drug profit? And my other question is, she recently said that she did a survey of, I think it was malls, businesses in malls in some areas, and came to the conclusion that a high percentage of the businesses weren't actually viable, and they may have just been there for money laundering. And I'd like to ask her to elaborate on that.
All right. Go ahead, Catherine. And I would guess that you would say the drug push was done intentionally.
Yeah, no, the drug push, we literally, to amass capital, the question at the end of World War II is, how are we going to build our banks and corporations into major multinational forces? I mean, that's one of the most important strategic points if you're going to build empire. And so how do you amass capital to really grow and back them? And one of the things you've got to do in addition to getting money is you've got to have those companies build a strong base of market share. So you need the big corporations to take away market share from small business. So how do you get corporations to rule on Main Street? And one of the ways you do that, and it's a model that we see all over the world, and it's very similar whether you're in Latin America or North America, but what you do is you bring drugs into a place that generates a cash flow, and you use that cash flow essentially to buy the market share in that place. So you think of it as a neighborhood leverage buyout. And in the process, you build the train tracks of control that allow you to do a lot of things, the most important of which is control the government data and government money. So I think, you know, there's no doubt about it that, that one of the critical financing tools and control tools of empire has been narcotics trafficking, and it's been very successful. And if you look at how we're laying out the legal legal sort of train tracks as a war on terror, it's really built on taking the war on drugs and kind of shifting it over to a new shtick, which is terrorism. So there's a wonderful book, if you're interested, Michael Woody was, who's an academic in the UK, has a book called American Organized Crime and American Power, or American Power and Organized Crime, and it really describes in detail sort of the mechanics of how this has all worked, and it's really quite good.
Centerville, Indiana, it's your turn, Ron. First time. Go ahead.
Hey, George. It's good to finally get to talk to you.
Good. I'm glad you got
through. Hey, I want to thank you for that Ed McMahon thing earlier. I thought he was a wonderful guy, and I really enjoyed him growing up.
Thank you.
I want to thank you for that.
He'll be missed.
Yes, definitely. My question, I've actually got kind of a combination question. It's really a simple question for your guest is, first of all, should we save our money or should we be spending it? Or does it even matter since within a couple of years the dollar's not going to be worth anything anyway and we're all going to be doing without? And I'll take my question off the air.
Okay.
Great question. We have a negative savings rate. We need to have a positive savings rate. Now, the question is, what is the store of value that you save in? And so, you know, it's possible to save your money by buying real thing, you know, or to save in having land and tangible assets that you can use. You can also save in different stores of value, so you can save in different currencies or our currency. And I think there is risk of saving in dollar-denominated assets, but it's very important to build financial security, and a lot of that is finding ways of getting our income up or our expenses down. But savings is important, and that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to leave it sitting in dollars. There are lots of different ways to save, and stockpiling was one that I mentioned, getting it in tangible assets that you know you're going to use.
Are there still any values out there in the stock market? Can we, you know, dabble in the penny market, or is that dangerous?
Well, I think that, you know, there are always values. There are always values. The challenge we have, George, is that we have price earnings ratios, or sort of price levels, that are way, way, way above anything that we've seen in cycles like this. So the danger that we get a big drop in price levels, and the only thing that could keep it up is significant inflation, is very real. That's number one. Number two, the signs of different things like naked short selling, not being able to get your certificates. Corruption in the U.S. stock markets, I think, is really driving investors away. And those concerns are very real, because if a price can be set by rigging and manipulation instead of markets, then buying for fundamental value doesn't necessarily work. So I think you've got to be really – I would much – we've seen reports that George Soros, Jimmy Rogers, famous investors are buying farmland.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a signal that we all need to take in deeply, strategic resources, food, water, energy. Do we want to put our money in the stock market, or do we want to put our money in arranging those strategic resources?
Well, remember the old saying, Catherine, the rich get rich and the poor get poor. Thank you so much. That was Catherine Austin Fitz. She was guest number three behind door number three. Secret door. I had some fun. For Jason Bowers, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Boich, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.